Well, Lando Norris had won 3 out of the last 4, but his title chances may have just gone kaboom. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Oh dear. It's never a good sign when your driver says, "I can hear us," or "hear." you can have a smell in the cockpit and then it's all gone horribly wrong. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 613 of Motorsport 101. My intros are normally better than that. I'm Dre Harrison, pleasure for you to be listening to us as always. And in the second half of this doubleheader where Formula One wasn't the headlining subject this time, we're going to be talking about the Dutch Grand Prix from Zandvoort. It was a very dramatic affair, maybe not the best in terms of racing, but we had some big old flashpoints here, including one that could decide where this world championship is heading after a very evenly matched beef between Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. Lando Norris, 8 laps from the flag at the Dutch Grand Prix, engine failure, blows up, detonates, Piastri completes a grand slam. It's a 34-point championship game now. First race back after the summer break, and we have our first, well, maybe second, arguably, real championship flashpoint. Joining me to talk through it all is Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello again, mate.
Welcome back, F1, from our summer break. Yeah, this was a very dramatic, very intriguing 4 out of 10 race because it's Zandvoort. Look, I will miss the atmosphere of this place when it inevitably goes off the calendar because they don't want to run races here anymore. It's just too expensive. I will miss the atmosphere, but you know what? Maybe F1 has outgrown this place. That's fine. Formula One outgrew Brands Hatch like years ago. And everybody loves Brands Hatch.
One of the best racetracks in Europe. Stand by.
Yeah, it's just you would never want to have a modern F1 race there, though.
Absolutely not. It would be awful. Where the hell would you pass in modern day F1 cars around Brands? Not a hope in hell.
You've got to be like Charles Leclerc. You got to be a little nasty with it.
Just run them off into the grass at Dingle Dell and hope for the best. Yeah, just roll with that. Not a prayer. No, I completely agree. The TIFO in the atmosphere we had going into this race was awesome. 305,000 weekend attendance is huge. That's over 100,000 on race day. It's clearly a very popular race. It's clearly a big Dutch hive experience, and it looks like a lot of fun to be at. Public transport support as well. All the good things you hope for an F1 race weekend, apart from the actual racing part. But hey, that all happens. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Oscar Piastri's win, a very different kind of orange. Lando Norris's failure, a day of the haunts. And I don't mean that in a positive way, as both Ferraris crash out of the race via entirely separate means at the same corner, no less, as well. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Kimi Antonelli and his part in the role of F1, and we'll catch up on the big, I guess it's big, but also kind of predictable news that Cadillac F1 have chosen their drivers. Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez will be the two Cadillac pilots introduced by John Wick from The Matrix, as you do. So until then, we'll tell you where you can find us real quick first and foremost. We're at youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter @motorsport_101. We're on Instagram @motorsport101pod. And we are on TikTok @m101_podcast. If you want to check out our website as well, you can, motorsport101.com. There's full written reviews of every major F1 race we cover on the show, including Formula One at Zandvoort and IndyCar's final race of the season at Nashville. And there'll be, of course, a full IndyCar season review up on the site in the next weeks or so. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our written content and podcasts, and you can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they are being recorded, as Vic and Ghost Raptor are doing so right now. Thank you very much for listening in, as always, much appreciated. Right, without further ado, let's get into the Dutch Grand Prix over at Zandvoort.
Well, we mentioned it. It was a Grand Prix of theatrics. F1's back from a summer break to take on the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, the second to last we may ever see at a track where overtaking comes at a premium, unless you're willing to do what Charles Leclerc did to George Russell at that one corner. It was not ethical wheel. It was very impressive, but I wouldn't say it was ethical. Anyway, Oscar Piastri took pole position by just 12 milliseconds on Saturday, and that led start to finish on Sunday for his first Grand Slam victory. But all the drama, all the drama happened behind the Austrian. For now, we'll just focus on the title picture as, with just 8 laps left, Lando Norris suffered a catastrophic power unit failure and was forced to retire. With Piastri winning, his championship lead grows to 34 points with 9 races left in the season. Is this it? Are we done here?
Like, it's one of those ones where you don't want to think it's the kill shot because we still have so much racing left. But in the words of Mick McCarthy in that famous meme video when he's managing, it can. And this is the problem. I mean, let's do some napkin maths here. It's now a 34-point gap. You gain 7 for first over second. McLaren have been the dominant team in Formula One all season. They've won 11 of 14. I think the default prediction is McLaren will 1 and 2 if there's no shenanigans.
Yeah, we're already having talks that this McLaren might be one of F1's best all-time cars, in which I say it's fast, but what does it bring to the table? Anyway.
Yeah, it's no matter which way you slice it, it's a very, very good car. It's won 11 out of 14 so far this season, and the default setting is now McLaren 1 and 2. Norris probably has to win 6 out of the last 9 to relist. I think that's the most likely path he gets to winning the championship now. And the other problem with that is that if this engine is toast and it can't be salvaged depending on what the damage is, he's probably going to have to take an engine penalty between now and the end of the season. And the first one of those is 10 grid places. That could be a problem. Can Norris get that McLaren back up to second? So at least it's, if he's losing out, it's only a par loss rather than a bigger loss than if Piastri wins. You know, does he lose the 7 points of finishing second, or does he lose more if he doesn't finish in second? Basically, in my opinion, Norris probably has to win 6 of 9 to win it all from here. That's, for me, the most likely scenario. Now, he can do that. He'd won 3 of the last 4 going into this race weekend, and this was a weekend, in my opinion, that could have easily gone either way. Qualifying was so close, 12 thousandths between them. Piastri getting the toe at the end probably made the difference on that one. Zandvoort is the sort of track where if you're going to dominate this race, you do so from the front. It's a very track conditions prevailing circuit. Generally, we've not had too much of the McLarens in actual combat, so qualifying is going to be very, very important for the rest of the season. I don't know, man. I wouldn't say it's a kill shot, but the bookies now have Piastri as a 1-3 favorite, which, for those who don't know you're betting, it means you'd have to, if you risked $100 on it, your profit would be $30. It's not a particularly profitable investment and risk if you were to do that. And the bookies don't normally get this wrong, is what I would say. And I think that's a good price. Piastri should be odds on favorite now going forward. And that's unfortunate because I don't want a title fight to come down to things like that, but that's motorsport sometimes.
Yeah, it will not have been the first time that this has happened. Anecdotally, we've seen people dig this back up. Dre, you should know that it is possible to make this sort of comeback. Because with 6 races to go in the 2010 season, Sebastian Vettel was 31 points down on then-championship leader Lewis Hamilton. Sebastian Vettel left as the 2010 Formula One world champion, the youngest in history. And then 2 years later, he was what? He was what? 39 points down with 7 races to go? It can be done.
Yeah, Seb won all four races in Asia that year in 2012 as part of the big comeback that ultimately led into him winning the championship by three by the time it was all said and done. It's more than doable, and we've already seen big swings already in this title fight. Piastri spun out from third in Australia in his own backyard, ended up finishing ninth on the day. And yeah, that was a bucket load of points lost because Norris won that race. Norris drove into the back of Piastri at Canada. That was arguably 10 to 12 points lost, depending on how you slice it. So we've seen big swings already at times this season. Piastri has not been perfect by any stretch of the imagination. He can be beaten. He has been beaten. Some would argue it was luck, but again, that's motorsport for you. It's doable. But the odds are now definitely a bit more stacked against Lando than it was going into this weekend. And he needs to be at his best for the vast majority of these remaining nine weekends if he realistically wants to do it. Because there's no getting around it. This is the best Oscar Piastri we've seen. And he has been generally rather unflappable when he's at the front. He's a safe pair of hands at this point. And you assume if he hits the front, he's going to win it because he just doesn't fold these sorts of opportunities. I wouldn't say he's the complete opposite to the quote-unquote bottler we've often labelled Norris with, fairly or unfairly, but at this point, I'm pretty assured when Piastri's leading a race.
Yeah. Coupled with the fact that he hasn't had a mechanical, non-classified retirement since his very first weekend of the sport in Bahrain in 2023. Mm. If you're Oscar Piastri, you just got to keep your dad down and keep doing what you've been doing for most of this season. You do that, you will win the Formula One World Championship for Australia for the first time in 45 years, man. And that'd be so cool. On the other hand, if you're a Lando Norris fan, you got to be thinking, surely this can't, he's got to falter at some time, right?
It's just the thing, like, there's no obvious weakness in Piastri's game anymore. He's good enough where he can qualify on pole on merit. The qualifying was a problem last year. It isn't anymore. He's had five pole positions. He's leading the qualifying head-to-head against Nando this year. You know, his race pace has always been excellent in terms of raw speed. He's got the tire management down now as well. That was another weakness in Piastri's game that he seemingly figured out. There's no obvious way to beat this man anymore. The obvious way now is out-qualify him at the front, hold the front, and make him have to work for it. But you could argue that's the same vice versa because of the way Formula One is right now. And in my opinion, these two guys are so evenly matched. The guy at the front of the team is likely going to win because McLaren are not going to mix it up on strategy too much. And they're just so evenly matched that it's rare that they make a huge mistake that's going to cost them a Grand Prix one way or the other. It's the closest matchup I've seen between teammates for a title fight that I can ever remember. Hamilton and Rosberg was not like this.
Yeah.
Like, there were moments where Rosberg was quicker, but it was often like Rosberg was clearly the faster man over a weekend. Yeah. This, don't know.
So evenly matched. Reminds me of, you know, Hakkinen and Coulthard sometimes, although there was a clear gap between Hakkinen and Coulthard. Well, there is another McLaren duo that was very evenly matched and turned out to be very combustible in Alain Prost and Ayrton Senna. I'm very curious to see where this heads. We're going to Italy next. Last race of the traditional European leg of the calendar. Ought to be very fascinating to see how that turns out. And who could potentially play spoiler? Will it be Ferrari? Will it be Red Bull? Will it be Mercedes? We just don't know. Vic also points out Niki Lauda and Alain Prost from 84. People forget how evenly matched those two were because of Alain's future teammate down the road at McLaren.
Very much so.
So, one thing as well, We'll talk about more about this Dutch Grand Prix in a second. Again, not a lot of excitement going on, but we did get confirmation of what was becoming the worst kept secret in the Formula One paddock this weekend. Cadillac F1 team, ironically using Toyota GR Cup North America legend Keanu Reeves to unveil the signing of Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez as their two drivers, not just for the 2026 Formula One season, but also the 2027 Formula One season. They're on multi-year contracts. Bottas, 36, has been Mercedes reserve driver this year after a three-year run at Sauber, while Perez, 35, has been on the sidelines after being pushed out of a very, very tough situation at Red Bull. Dre, is this the right move for the brand new Cadillac team? Should they have gone elsewhere?
Welcome to Unc Division. This is the oldest driver pairing in Formula One since Narain Carter-Kahan and Pedro De La Rosa at HRT.
I gotta tell you, Cadillac is not beating its reputation as a geriatrics What do you mean they're my age? Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, am I cooked?
We all might be cooked here as guys enter in our mid-30s, already in his 30s in RJ's case. man says man who turned 33 2 weeks ago. But yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, okay, personally, from the Cadillac standpoint, I think this was a perfectly reasonable hire. I think it was a sensible hire. I think everything Cadillac has done to this point from the way they've built their team has been sensible and the logical way of doing things. Having a UK base, bringing in a bunch of the FIA's old dudes and, you know, Patrick Head, guys who know how to build a car. Graham Loudon was someone that did an awful lot with very little when he was in charge of Manor Mauritia. I think he's a great guy to lead this team going forward. And I think they've done it the sensible way. I think there's two ways you can build a brand new F1 team in the context of where F1 is at right now. I think you can either do what Cadillac's doing and you play it extremely safe, or you try and maximize one skill tree, take gambles and hope you can get a really good day that falls on your lap and you might be able to snag some points, because that's ultimately going to be the aim of Cadillac when they first drop into F1. Score a few points here and there and just be competitive. That would probably be a reasonable year one expectation. They've gone for the safe approach and there's nothing wrong with that at all.
I was going to say one thing is that, like, I've learned throughout my time is that Formula One teams are not football clubs. They're not basketball teams. They cannot rebuild around youth alone. This is the highest profile new entry with new infrastructure, not, you know, one team buying out all the shares of an old team and rebranding it as another. Not one of those deals. New infrastructure, new entry that we've had in 25 years since Toyota. They don't want to end up like Toyota did. I think Valtteri Bottas was good enough to warrant staying on the grid this year if there were enough seats for him to stay on the grid this year and there were not. I know how, we all know how his time at Red Bull ended, but was Sergio Perez so bad that he didn't deserve to be in the sport anymore? I don't think so. I'm really curious to see how this goes, because one reason why I wanted a bigger F1 grid in the first place is that, yes, it does help remove the bottleneck of young drivers trying to advance to F1. And the other reason is that it helps these experienced guys have at least one more safety net to stay on the grid that they shouldn't have completely fallen off of. You know, Haas went with Grosjean and Esteban Gutierrez back in the day. They had a little bit of experience, but nothing like this. I think the last time some team had like this much experience starting straight up with no previous infrastructure was what? Lotus in 2010 with Kovalainen and Trulli, and even then there was all the experience was on Trulli's side of the garage. And of course it didn't work out for other reasons. But yeah, you can call this veteran presence like gifts, because that's all they're giving you. They're not giving you speed or anything, but ultimately Formula One is a sport where you got to hit the ground running, and whether we like it or not, this is the most sensible move if you need drivers to help get your program up to speed quickly. One other thing, Cadillac or anybody else in this team should not be giving a rat's ass who wins in the head-to-head stats in the so-called Hamilton versus Verstappen proxy war that I've been seeing so much love about on social media. It's all about get as many points as you can where you can get them in year one. Even if one guy is like blowing out the other in qualifying. I have seen some insane stuff being written about this matchup already. They have not even turned a wheel on the track.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They have been used as pawns in the greater argument between Verstappen and Hamilton, which has been, what, 5 years now of just back and forth vitriol between their respective fan bases. No, it's irrelevant. They're not driving for Red Bull and Mercedes anymore. Let them do their thing here. I completely agree. This is sensible. This is what you need. I mean, you're talking over 520 starts in Formula One between these two to start an F1 team. I think these are both dudes in the top 20 most experienced Formula One drivers ever. It doesn't get much more unk division than this, quite frankly. And yeah, the speed might not be there, but you're a brand new F1 team. The speed probably wasn't going to be there anyway. Even if the drivers were great, the car probably won't be. This is a learning experience for them. This is like, if you look at their careers, Bottas was known for having an awful lot of speed. Maybe not so much at Sauber, but he had 20 pole positions in Formula One with Mercedes. There were days where he was genuinely quicker than Lewis Hamilton. Outright on merit.
He was at Williams and he was going to make Kimi Raikkonen redundant and that ultimately never happened?
Yeah, like Bottas has always had speed. And I think Sergio Perez is a likely victim of Red Bullitis. You know, the whole idea of, hey, Red Bull just drains you of all your talent because it's a car that it's incredibly difficult to drive. And Perez already... I love the story that Dan Taris told the media that we weren't sure about Checo after last year either. And then Perez turned around in interviews and said to him, well, look at everybody else who struggled in that Red Bull seat since then. Oh, sorry, that struck a nerve, RJ.
I've been through this with... I'm not even counting Lawson's stint, so I'm just saying the last two guys that have been in that Red Bull second seat. I also love that Dan Towers immediately shut down that his team was hiring Christian Horner. That's funny.
Did anyone ask? They've already got Graham Loudon, so why would they even consider bringing in... Who made up this shit, honestly?
I don't know, man. They've got Graham Loudon. It looks like Christian Horner is going to, I don't know, maybe form the Axis of Evil with Briatore and Bernie Ecclestone at Alpine.
Evil.
One last thing here. Real things that people are willing to stick their reputation out to. Quote, Bottas will annihilate Perez next season. And if he doesn't, I will learn Spanish, apply for Mexican citizenship, and make pilgrimage to Guadalajara. Screenshot this. Bookmark this. Do whatever you like. It won't matter. That's how confident they... Do you know how much none of this matters for a first-year program?
Everything's got to be a battle on F1 Twitter. Everything has to be a fight. Everything has to be me against you on a burner account discussing how many points this guy got in Saudi Arabia on a given year to make your point that that guy is cooked and your guy isn't. It's bollocks. Honestly, it's such bullshit. I can't stand discussing F1 on Twitter anymore.
Yeah, this is what radicalized me back into being just watch the races guy. I don't know, man. I hope it goes well for Cadillac. I know people have very bottom of the barrel expectations for this program in year one. I certainly hope they don't have a first year that's as bad as Toyota's was.
No. Look, the first year goal should be competitive. Don't be a clear bottom team. If you can run alongside even the bottom end of the grid like Alpine are at the moment, because look, Alpine are the worst team in Formula One right now on points scored, but it's not like they're finishing 19th and 20th every weekend. Like Franco Colapinto, for example, was 11th this weekend. Like, it's like the midfield is such a dogfight right now, if you're in the middle of that dogfight, chances are you'll probably nab a point or two at some point in a 24-race season. Like, law of averages will probably just give you a shot right there and then. Just be competitive. If you're competitive and hanging around the bottom end of the field right now, maybe you'll get lucky on strategy or rain or an attrition race. That's your best shot of points, but just be in the picture. That would be a huge gain in year one, and then they can build from there. And I think Bottas and Perez gives them the best chance of being able to do that. I saw some of the other names floated, like Colton Herta, we talked about in our last episode. Like Mick Schumacher, who's now become a fine sports car driver in Alpine. He does not need to go back to F1 again, quite frankly. And a bunch of others. Like the only guy I'm a little bit sorry for is Jack Crawford in all of this. It's like, am I dead to you when it comes to like having an American F1 driver, and Jack's right there in an F2 title fight right now with Dams, and no one cares. I know he's a year three guy in Formula 2, but it's sad. It's like, we want to keep the doors open for an American F1 driver. Hi, I'm Jack Crawford, not you. It's not particularly fair, but it is what it is, you know.
We're powerless to change it at the moment. Jack Crawford's had a good third season, I gotta say. And it does kind of stink that it looks like his potential is just going to be like, well, you do what Neil Verhagen did and land yourself in with a good sports car program when he probably really wants to be in Formula One. Just one more time. The Bottas Perez lineup is old. People will have their doubts whether they can do anything, but it's more on the team to make sure that job gets done. It's time to talk about Ferrari therapy sessions once again.
Again? Third time this month?
Again! Ferrari suffered a double DNF. Lewis Hamilton understeered at the end of his first stint in the Grand Prix and hit the wall outside of Hugenholt's corner and ended his race. And then Kimi Antonelli hit Charles Leclerc in an overtaking attempt at the same corner. He caught Leclerc's rear tire, put Leclerc into the same wall. Antonelli received 15 seconds worth of time penalties to effort the collision and 5 more for speeding in the pit lane. And now Ferrari has a double DSQ and a double DNF in the same season. Woo. And also, one other thing. Throw out Hamilton's sprint win at the start of the year. Lewis Hamilton has now spent the longest time at Ferrari without a Grand Prix podium in the history of Scuderia Ferrari. And they say that man's done breaking records.
Ivan Capelli had gone 14 races there before his first podium in Formula One.
And he was fired with 2 races left in the season.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton is now at 15 Grand Prix weekends for Ferrari without a podium finish. And I mean, I see in the notes here what to make of Ferrari's pain. So we'll talk about that a little bit first. And it's a shame in 2 ways, because one, Lewis was a lot closer to Leclerc this weekend. He was only half a tenth behind him in qualifying, and then in the race he's running right behind Leclerc and Antonelli as they're fighting, and he was probably about 1 or 2 laps away from trying an undercut attempt to try and get in front of the pair of them, and then he loses control of the front of his car, has a tank slapper right in the Hugenholtz bank in, loses the front, goes into the right side wall, and it's terminal. And I don't want to be all doom and gloom about Lewis, because there were genuine positives to take away from him this weekend. It wasn't like some of the other weekends where they were true disasters, like Saudi Arabia, for example, or the meltdown in Miami. This was a genuinely good weekend for Lewis right up until when it wasn't. So there's something to take away from that. And look, Charles, once again, just bitterly unlucky. Leclerc's come out of the pits, 2-stop strategy. Antonetti's on hot tires. He's coming around. He's going to have a go, because he knows if he can't get him here, he's probably not going to be able to get him on track at all, because Zandvoort, you can't pass. He drifts up on the Hugenholtz, trying the inside line. He understeers out, clips Leclerc's tire, and bang, into the wall. And we got the iconic shot of Leclerc on the mountain hill at Hugenholtz, staring into space like it's the Tom and Jerry cartoon where they're both sat on the train tracks. It's rough out here, man. Like, just another miserable weekend for the Hods.
It's those photos go so hard. The professional photos that were taken by dudes like Jamie Price. You could put that on some album cover tomorrow and it would go into the top 20 charts. That shit goes hard, man. And parental yet it's advisory. Always at Leclerc's expense.
Parental advisory, explicit content. There's always a Leclerc picture that can sum up the mood as to how he might feel in that Ferrari camp at any given time. Again, having a good weekend, like there was a chance they could have salvaged like P5 out of this. Ferrari were nowhere on Friday. They were really struggling. Leclerc was saying it was the worst Friday of the season for them. He hated it out here. And yeah. Basically, they were able to recover in the race a little bit, and then that happens, which is just mad unfortunate. RJ, what if you made some of the Kimi Antonelli chat? Because this has been hovering around for a little while now that, it did not help that Sky Sports F1 had Jacques Villeneuve in the paddock this weekend. You know what Jacques Villeneuve
has never been known to put out an incendiary take. He's never been known to spew lava on an open mic before, right?
The way I described it in my DRR was Jacques Villeneuve is Nico Rosberg, but he lets the intrusive thoughts win. That's Jacques Villeneuve, because sometimes he will try to make valid arguments about why he thinks the way he feels about things, and then he'll just say, maybe Yuki Tsunoda is just not good enough. Not having watched his previous 100 Grand Prix in Formula One, because then Jack will just say some shit.
In this sense, I'm kind of glad that we're just like, but yeah, it's been a rough bit of form here, because in between, on one, bookending both sides of a third place podium finish in Canada has been a rough bunch of races. And this outing in Zandvoort, where people tried to surmise that, like, oh, was Antonelli sent to try and exact revenge for Charles Leclerc making a somewhat unethical overtake on George Russell? That's ultimately not what happened, but that thought did enter people's, again, letting the intrusive thoughts win. We did say that this was going to be a high risk promotion to bring him straight up to Mercedes. And we know that there are people who tell you, nah, he's good enough to get the promotion. Like, and I tend to take that side. Is it just like the early season success? Is that kind of evening out? And this is what we should expect for an 18-year-old rookie being thrust right into the spotlight in year one?
I think it's a fair question to ask. Maybe our expectations were too high. Maybe we drank a bit too much of the Kool-Aid going in, because Antonelli had a lot of people back him for an F1 seat at 18. Mm-hmm. I remember one of my earlier weekends at Autosport when I was working their social media. It was the Italian Grand Prix at Monza last year, his first FP1 session, and that infamous crash he had 10 minutes into practice. And I remember having, and this is no disrespect to them, the fantastic journos, Alex Kalinorkas now at The Athletic and Jonathan Noble now at The Race, talking about how he was going 8 to 9 miles an hour faster than anybody else was going for a corner. And that was their vindication as to why it was almost impressive that he crashed in the way that he did.
Yeah, I think I remember it was the most impressive crash that anybody had ever had.
Yeah, just absolutely crazy glaze that was being dropped that weekend. I was editing their videos talking about that from a social cut standpoint, and I was like, this is a strange way to talk about a driver, right? Yeah. And so
talk about Verstappen like this?
To a degree. I remember when he was
the one year he was in Formula 3.
Not even that. I remember his like third or fourth Grand Prix. I think it was the Chinese Grand Prix. This is back when BBC still had part time F1 rights, and Eddie Jordan was still a pundit. And he said after four rounds he's going to be a future world champion. And after three or four Grand Prix, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ. People love to nail their flag to the mast early on these things. It makes them feel better about their gambits and predictions. I like Antonetti a lot. I think he's clearly a talented kid. You don't fluke shit like the Miami Sprint Pole or that Canadian Grand Prix weekend where he was running right with George, who won the race. Like, there's clearly a boatload of talent here with this kid. And he's only going to get better. But I also think we probably glazed him a bit too much early on, and that as much as he's an incredibly talented rookie, he is still a rookie. And that's something that I think we need to acknowledge. It hasn't helped that George Russell's been a pain for two different reasons. Number one, he's been brilliant this year. George Russell has been a driver of the year candidate for me this season, and that has not helped. Only because the level of expectations only going to be higher, because the only real metric we use is teammate battles. And when George Russell has been that good this season, it's going to be hard for Antonetti to match that level of output straight away. The other problem is that George has been running his mouth to the media all year long about his contract extensions, to the point where even at this weekend, he was saying, my seat was never going to be at risk for Max. It was going to be Kimi they were going to let go. And I'm just like, you are not helping.
Another thing that George Russell's driving has done is it's papering over a lot of cracks in Mercedes right now. They're still pretty inconsistent as a team, Dre.
They still have a lot of the same problems they had last year, where their performance can very much vary as to whether they get their tires in the window performance-wise. They've struggled with temperature control all season long. They've tried bringing bits like side pod upgrades to try and mitigate some of that, but they've just not been consistent this year. On a good day, we've seen them challenge McLaren for race wins. On a bad day, they're the fourth best team in Formula One, and they're a clear number four in that rankings. And it's still, Mercedes are still, I think, the same team they've roughly been for the last two or three years, where on a good day, they can genuinely win, but it's going to be sporadic. They're not going to be a consistent threat for wins over a full calendar year yet. They're still lacking consistency and a higher floor, but the ceiling is there. Definitely. No doubt about that. I think ultimately Antonetti will be fine. I just think that we are victims of our own hype train sometimes, and that it's a sporting thing that I think we do with F1 and other sports like football, where we like to build someone up to chop them down again because it makes us feel better about what we've written. Like, I saw this in British sport all the time of our football players, with Emma Raducanu. I'll give you a US Open tennis reference there, given that's going on right now. Like, we did that with Emma Raducanu. We did it with Raheem Sterling. We've done it with so many other sporting stars where
Anthony Joshua,
you build them up and up and up and up, and when they let you down, it's like, here comes the dog pile. You know, and Antonetti might be another victim of that, because people want to be first more than they want to be right. And that's the sort of sports culture that we're in right now, because we want to be the guy who puts out the hot take saying that, nah, Antonetti might actually suck, Jacques. Because we all saw him at Imola earlier, so it was like, why has he got all his school kids in the garage? This is a professional atmosphere. Jack, you released a music album. Fuck off. Honestly, you thought you were a musician, buddy. Like, I don't need your opinion on whether things are a good look in the landscape of F1. But, you know, it's that sort of media environment that we're in right now. It's just, I could go on a small tangent and say it's the same thing with Norris and Piastri right now, where people want there to be beef between these two so bad, and these two dudes are not built for it. And that's a good thing. Like, Piastri is the calmest.
It's their fan bases that are beefing. It's like Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt. They were pretty chill with each other. It's
they loved
their
each other.
Fan bases that couldn't stand each other.
Dale had tremendous respect for Jeff Gordon. He loved seeing what he thought was a younger version of him coming through in NASCAR. He loved and put an arm out there. I was like, yeah, good racing, son. Norris and Piastri are not like this in the sense of they're not going to be beefing with each other. Oscar Piastri is a very diplomatic, very calm, very stoic, very well-measured young man, and I actually have deep respect for how he handles the media and conducts himself. He's a very classy individual, and Lando Norris, you will never be able to tell Lando Norris anything that he hasn't already told himself when it comes to criticism. Again, very open about his mental health. He doesn't get angry. He doesn't get bitter about things for very long. Even when he was beefing with Max last year, Max did some heinous things to him on track that season. Norris shrugged it off. Like, they've always been, him and Max have been very close friends. You know, like, it's, they got the same plane back home together after Austria last year, for Christ's sake. You know, it's, they're not built for fisticuffs, and that's okay. It just means people like Sky's got to work harder.
Yeah. You want to flip this on its side? I was really happy to see Isaac Hadjer finish third in this Grand Prix. He had a terrific weekend.
It's wild. We've gone nearly 40 minutes and this is the first time we've mentioned Hadjer on the podium. That's kind of our bad, yeah. Really. No.
Yeah. Oops, Hadjer was tremendous. Bad. Yeah. Third place in the Grand Prix. And look, I'm so happy. Because I was worried that he was up against it. Because going into the season, right, Isaac Hadjer is in a Red Bull situation where Max Verstappen is the franchise. You have a dilemma over whether Liam Lawson or Yuki Tsunoda is the right person to be the number two driver at Red Bull. And you have Arvid Lindblad waiting in the wings looking like the closest thing Red Bull has to a new Max Verstappen. Where does that leave Isaac Hadjer as a rookie who finished runner-up in Formula 2, who people always have questions about his temperament, or if he's that good, etc., etc.? It kind of just came out of nowhere to succeed. And it didn't look good for him to stick around more than 1 year in the sport. At least that's how I thought. He's got himself a podium now. Racing Bulls first in a hot minute. He's doing so well that he's trying to fight off the advances to get into the number two Red Bull seat. He's like, no, don't put me here.
Yeah, I think it's the first podium for that team since the Gasly win. I don't think they've had one since then. Yeah, and he's also F1's fifth youngest ever podium sitter. He's not even 21 for another couple of weeks. And the thing about this with Hadjer is that this was not a fluke. There was no shenanigans involved, really, that got him here. He was fourth on the grid, on merit, when he qualified. He put in a stonking good lap to beat all the other midfield threats around him. He held off George Russell and Charles Leclerc early on in the race. They couldn't find a way around him. He held his ground. His pace was good. He was matching Verstappen for large portions of the race in terms of outright speed. And he didn't flap under pressure. He was running fourth the whole race. And then, of course, when Norris's engine failure happens, it bumps him up to third. And just like that, he's a podium finisher. Magnificent race. Hadjer was absolutely flawless. Did not put a foot wrong when it mattered all weekend. Yeah. One of the best individual drives of the season. And it goes to show you that, first of all, the issues with temperament were completely unfounded. This is a guy who's got
I think that Formula 2 is just not as healthy an environment as people like to think it is.
It just isn't, man. Look, it's... it's not a place where you go for temperament. No, like, for all the shit that Hadjer had to put up with when he got to F1, that, of course, that horrible first race in Australia and having to be comforted on live TV by Anthony Hamilton. Look, I don't necessarily want to praise Hadjer's mental resilience because I don't think it's something that we should praise. From a mental health standpoint, I feel like personally, if you are not strong enough to deal with adversity in life, you shouldn't be criticized for that. It's, emotions are tough. It's hard out there. It's, I don't necessarily want to praise toughness because people can't necessarily handle that, and that's okay too. But the way Hadja has bounced back from that tough start to the point where he was racking up points, he's got a something he's got 37 now on the season, and now he's got this podium finish, the cherry on top. His ultimate goal for this season, when he held up his school board at the start of the year, was get a podium finish, and he has one on merit, hard earned, no mess, no shenanigans. He did it the old fashioned way, like he was serving Coke in a 100-year-old diner. What a boy. Brilliant drive.
Appreciate that. Brilliant. Got a pop out of me, man.
Brilliant drive, well earned, and it goes to show you that at the start of the year we were worried that Hadja might be a one and done driver. Now we're worried he might be going to a Red Bull downgrade situation. It goes to show you what a difference 6 months can make, can't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those things. It's just like, I don't mind being wrong sometimes. People should be happy to be wrong sometimes. There are some situations where you should be very sad and despondent to be wrong, but this is not one of them. I'm glad for Isaac, man.
Glad for Isaac.
Keep it up the rest of the year.
Congrats to Isaac. Congrats to the team. And congrats to Alan Permain, who's done a very good job of keeping the team afloat after very difficult circumstances to come in on after Mekki's had to go to Red Bull halfway through the year. They've done a very, very sound job since then. They've kept kept the train going, and the midfield battle is going to be a bar fight between them, Kick Sauber, Williams, Aston Martin, who, by the way, another double points finish out of nowhere, but after being terrible all weekend long and have now had 30 points in their last 7 races. The midfield battle is anyone's guess. My God, what a fight.
I think you're glazing over a little bit of that. Fernando Alonso was ready to revolt against this team. Stop me if you've heard of this before. And Lance Stroll was looking quick all throughout practice until he was inexplicably not up for it in Q1.
Oh, yeah.
Looks nowhere, and they salvaged 7th and 8th out of this. I don't understand.
I don't either. Oddie Behrman went from the back and finished in 6th. Career high finish from him, like in a Haas. And this is a guy that has a Ferrari start to his name. And Behrman went from 19th to 6th. Alex Albon went from 15th to 5th in the quietest plus 10 day you'll ever see in Formula 1.
Rocket start on the first lap, dude.
Plus 5 on the opening lap. Holy.
One of these days now, Albon's going to get exposed at Williams. One of these days now. One of these, he might actually just be the best midfield driver in Formula One right now.
There is becoming a possibility that that's very much a real thing. Formula One is back this weekend, double bill. We're at the Italian Grand Prix, the Cathedral of Speed at Monza this weekend. I'm already pre-ordering blue Ferrari merch because I am a sucker for blue Ferrari merch. I am ready to be disappointed again, because that's what we do here in Ferrari copium land. But we'll talk about that on next week's show, alongside MotoGP's Grand Prix of Catalunya. We're back at Barcelona for the Catalunya Grand Prix this weekend as well. Real good, proper MotoGP race weekend. That is a incredible track. Going to be a great measure to see where the field is at after a couple of janky ones, including Balaton. But Catalunya's going to be fascinating.
And also, if you're at the 6 hours of Coda this weekend, by the time you're listening to this, come say hi if somehow you happen to find me in the media center.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All here for it.
It's going to be hot.
It's going to be hot indeed.
So hot and miserable.
Go say hi to RJ, me, RJ, and hopefully Cam Buckley will be back for next week's episodes on that. And obviously check out Lone Star No. 1 if you get the time as well. Until then, I've been Dre Harris and he's been RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.